Okay, next item. And we are gonna start with Shelley. Homelessness is an ongoing issue. What do you see as a solution? And what role do you think the city plays?
Well, when I got elected last year, or 3 years ago, it's gone by really fast, I tried to get a cold weather shelter ordinance passed for temporary shelter for 3 nights, like in churches, to make sure that was in our code. It got stalled out at the planning commission level and never went any farther, which I was very disappointed in because I felt like that was important, that we had a place to get people so they weren't sleeping in their cars. At this point, I kind of dropped it. I still think it's a problem, but one of the things that we have noticed over the last couple of years is that a lot of our homeless people, when it gets to that time of year, are leaving town and actually going to other communities for the winter. They were going to Kodiak, some were going back to Anchorage, and so it wasn't quite as much as what we had had before, but it still grieves me that I think in defense of the Planning Commission, it was too overwhelming. It wasn't just, they couldn't just see up to three days. All they saw was a big shelter that went bigger and bigger and bigger. And so I still think that's a critical place, that we have a place to temporarily keep somebody warm that's not sitting in the shelter of the hospital's doors or in jail.
Storm?
Well, I was not aware of that you brought to the table before, and I like that because I feel like we have an amazing program for our women. Our Haven House supports our women and children, but we do have a handful of gentlemen in town that are homeless, and not just gentlemen, but people that don't go seek out Haven House for resources. But it gets cold, and they're on our streets, and they're sitting outside Safeway, and whereas there's some really nice trails in Homer, I wouldn't want my kids who, back when I was a child here, we walked everywhere. I do not feel comfortable with my kids walking from Safeway up Grubstake through the grog shop area because I just do not know who they're going to encounter or what needles or drugs they might be exposed to laying around. So I think that would be great to revisit. That would be something that I would be really for and support.
Joey?
Thanks. As a scientist, I always like to identify solutions and truly understand a problem. And my understanding is homeless individuals usually arrive there by one of three mechanisms. One is losing a job, one is a mental health issue, and one is a substance abuse issue. And I think it's important to fully understand the underlying causes of these to try to get to a real solution. I love some of the ideas that have been mentioned. I think they're great. I think the city can do a lot more by working with Haven House, by working with the food pantry, to talk about solutions and to talk about the underlying causes of homelessness here. And also in our school district, Jane Dunn is the contact for that before trying to potentially seek out grants. State of Alaska just got an $8 million HUD housing grant. It was dedicated mostly for Bush communities, but also partly for Anchorage. And I think we could play a role like that in trying to steward grant writing processes for our community.
Tom?
Sure. Well, I think the role of accommodating the homeless is best facilitated by religious and charitable organizations. They've exhibited much success in that arena. They've really done some great jobs, and I don't think because of that the homeless situation should be a burden on the taxpayer. Thank you.
We are going to start with Storm. What are the pros and cons of a bed tax? It's a two-part question. We're starting with this first.
Well, again, I'm new to this, so forgive me. I'm lacking a little bit of knowledge on this. But from talking to some community members that are business owners on both the hospitality end of things and non-hospitality things, I feel like the bed tax might be a bit of a burden for the handful of lodging facilities that we have. I'm not so sure I support it completely. I think maybe we should have more like a recreation tax and share the burden from a handful of people to maybe across the board. So 10 people who have hotels or B&Bs versus 200 people, and lower the tax rate and spread the burden out a little bit more. But again, I'm not very knowledgeable on this, and there's a lot more I need to learn on it, and that's just kind of my brief thoughts on that.
Joey?
Thanks. It's on the pro side, I'm new to it as well, Storm, but it would not hit home residents, which is a good thing, and it would also promote economic development by way of tourism promotion. I understand a steady stream of those funds would then go through the Chamber of Commerce, which in turn helps our broader community prosper and grow in all kinds of ways, including long-term strategy down the line. So I think there's some really good points there. It's based on borough policy, and because that's a downward flowing stream, if you will, I think it would be wise to, well, it's easier to go with the stream than go up the stream against it. So that's a pro, and it's also thematic with Homer. If you go to Aspen, Colorado, or Park City, Utah, or one of these other resort communities, which I think we're like, folks tend to expect to spend a little bit more money there versus 20 miles out, and sometimes meeting the consumer with their expectation works well, and revenues actually go up. It's counterintuitive, but oftentimes, not going against the grain, but with the grain may be a good way to go. Thanks.
Thank you. Well, Kelly, you know, we've talked at length about this at the borough level many times, and, you know, I'm not in favor of a bed tax that targets a specific industry. I've long been an advocate for an across-the-board tourism tax, small, 1% to 2%, that could be levered over second and third quarters when our tourism is at peak season. This tax would be levied on everything that touches the tourism experience, from lodging to visitor-intensive businesses, and is more creative and more of an equitable approach. South Dakota has an excellent model that's been in place for years, and that model could easily be adopted by the borough to generate several million dollars annually. Thank you.
Shelley.
I think that it's imperative that we actually look at the way we're collecting sales tax. I think that I think there's a place for bed tax. I don't have a problem with a bed tax. Except for right now, I think it's really would add a huge extra burden on a few businesses, especially those that that do combo type of things with the housing. They would be with the bed tax. They would be dealing with one type of tax. On their fishing, they would be dealing with a separate type of tax. And the way that it all goes, it becomes very, very complicated. So I would say at this point, I think that there's some other things that we need to do to revisit and change our sales tax that we have now. And if I may put a plug in, I think the cap at $1,000 is a great place for us to start. And then we need to look at some other areas, which Kelly and I have had many conversations about.
And for full disclosure, the city of Homer is not a home rule city, so they are not able to institute a new tax. They have to rely on the borough instituting that tax, and then they can follow suit. So the bed tax doesn't give them the opportunity to create one without the borough doing it unless they were a home rule. And there are many in the hospitality industry. You know, it did pass at the borough level. The mayor vetoed it. There are many in the hospitality industry that have reached out to me, and we are going to be doing a work group over the winter on a tourism tax, so we'll keep you posted on that. Okay, the second part of that question is, do you think there are other changes that need to be made to the local tax code, and if so, what? And we'll start with Joey.
Local tax code. Let me dig through notes a little bit. I'm going to start by saying that I am a newcomer to the table, and so the local tax code is deep and thick. Burdensome indeed, and so yeah, I don't want to talk. I've not formulated all of my thoughts about that yet. But back to the bed tax, if that relates to the question in how you're asking it.
Thank you.
Getting back to expectations on the bed tax concept, I have an experience to share. I had an antique booth many years ago. When I was outside in a larger antique area, and I learned something interesting about pricing, and that is if you price things modestly, they wouldn't sell. If you priced them where I wasn't making a profit at all, they wouldn't sell. I just broke even. But if you priced them higher, so you were making profit, they'd sell immediately.
Thanks, Joe.
I think the bed tax is like that.
Great, thank you. Tom?
Thanks. Well, locally, our tax code seems sufficient for the services that Homer currently provides. However, what could use some tweaks is in the sales tax that's not being collected by approximately 400 or so Airbnbs that we have operating in the Homer area. We're losing considerable revenue by these activities that have simply slipped through the cracks. These under-the-radar establishments have eroded the revenue by reducing occupancy of many of the licensed B&Bs and other lodging establishments that are currently collecting the sales tax. So that's a good place to look into.
Shelley?
I think that a number of years ago, when we gave ourselves all a bigger credit on our property taxes, we kind of shot ourselves in the foot, because it's easier to take away the tax than to put it back on. And I thought that that wasn't a very wise decision at that point, but we were rolling in a lot of money at that point. Now we don't have that kind of money, and I think that that was one of the things. The other thing that is really controversial, but taking off the food tax was also, and just doing it for the 3 months in the summer, also was detrimental to us being able to offer the goods and services. I still think that we need to relook at home rule, because that is actually keeping us from being able to deal with the taxation like we need to. I again say that we have a lot of things that we need to really look at, and I would be more than happy to be on that committee, because you know I have lots of opinions from dealing with in and out of the city on sales tax.
Storm.
Sales tax, okay. So, not being super aware of all the city codes and taxes, I think it's best to be left to the citizens who have business owners and what they think is best. But I do think that, like Tom said, I have friends that manage properties, and Airbnb is huge. And so that takes away from, in my opinion, our affordable housing, our year-round housing, and our summer transient housing. So I know that the city of Anchorage has made a deal with Airbnb that those people who don't necessarily pay their taxes on it, City of Anchorage wanted to do away with it. So I feel like maybe Homer could look at that and make a deal with Airbnb, or Airbnb make a deal with the city of Homer, and the taxes get paid directly. It just filters through. The Airbnb owner does not actually pay the taxes to the city. It automatically goes through. I really think that would be a really good thing to look at.
All right, so again, the borough collects the taxes for the sales tax for the city, and we are working on an enforcement model for people that are getting that are listed on all of those multiple sites. If any of you are in the accommodation industry, I can't even tell you how many of there are, you know, hotels.com, Airbnb, vacation rental by owner. So we are working with them on enforcement, and we are also working with Airbnb to, but we have so many different jurisdictions, it makes it difficult. So just know that we are working on it. It's not moving as quickly as we can, but everything that the city wants to do, it's collected through the borough, and we have to make a program that makes that workable. So those are great ideas. All right, next item, we will start with Tom. Do you support Pebble Mine, and why or why not?
Oh. Well, the permitting of this project will be done by a government entity, the EPA, outside of the purview of Homer. I rely on precise and unbiased science to determine whether this facility should be licensed to operate or not. Personally, at this time, I do not have enough verifiable proof that this would not be a good project for our region or Alaska.
Shelley?
I am not a Pebble Mine supporter. I object to the fact that it would be a Canadian, a non U.S. Company that would be coming in and selling off our resources, and right there alone is just really irritates me. I'm not sure that it's in good for our fishing. I've not been, it's kind of where I'm at on that. But the flip side of it is, as the city council, I think it is imperative that we as a city, if it happens, that we pay attention and that we are able to have support roles, because we're going to have, there's going to be workers looking for places to live and all that, and we need to make sure that we're prepared for it, whether we agree with it or not. I think otherwise we're going to end up like we have with Kenai and Nikiski, and you see all these wonderful things that are there because they have embraced oil. Years ago, I was doing some stuff with BP with groups of people, and they were their interns coming in, and we were going into. I was taking them into restaurants, and they told me we can't wear our BP uniforms, anything that says BP, because we know how much Homer hates the big oil and these corporations. And I thought that was one of the saddest things I had ever heard. And I watched it for years. And so I think it's really important that we are doing what's best for our town.
Thank you, Storm.
Well, I really like what Shelley had to say about that. If it goes through, I think we do need to work together and figure out a way to make it okay, so that there's no hate about it, because we do have a lot of that here. But I'm not for it. I think the amount of money that we could get from it, and it being a Canadian company, isn't worth the risk of what it'll do if we have to spend the money to fix it, to clean it up. I just don't think it's worth it with the knowledge that I know about it.
Joey.
Thanks. Love a geologic question. There's a river in Montana called the Jefferson, and it's a well-known fly fishing river if you're a Montanan. And they stopped an $8 billion ore body project years ago that would have been developed because something on the order of 1,000 fly fishermen wanted their river for fly fishing. That's about the same value as the ore in the ground, as I understand it, over at Pebble, but we don't have a fly fishing river. We have the world's largest salmon run. So I think I'm sad that this has even gotten as far as it's gone. It was shut down originally based on science, and then that was undermined and pulled away. So I guess I have a lot of thoughts about it. I don't think it'll bring many jobs. Typically mining companies bring in their own folks to run the trucks and that kind of thing. They've talked about building a small town over there, but I would argue if we're talking about 40 or 80 jobs, we could do that just as well by getting large grants to study the world's largest salmon run. And on a numbers basis alone, there's something on the order of $1 billion worth of fish that are harvested every year if you follow the economics all the way through the canneries, profits, and ultimately till it gets on a dinner plate at a restaurant in Seattle or something like that. And so $1 billion each year renewable versus $8 billion is a one-time shot, and mining isn't even that profitable, so it'd probably be more like five. I don't think it's worth it by any metric. So.
Thank you. We'll start with you on this one, Shelley. Do you have public safety concerns for our community? And if so, what are they, and how should they be addressed?
First of all, I want to say that I want to thank the state for changing SB 91. There was some issues there that where we were letting people loose that shouldn't be loose. And I got to tell you, my business was one of those that people were we were robbed at gunpoint, and the person never made it to trial and was let back on the streets. And that law should change that, where that wouldn't happen again. That being said, it's still going on around us, and I think it's really imperative. I'm really glad that we have a new police station coming with all the new bells and whistles that we need to have there. But I think it's still important that people are very aware of what's going on in their neighborhoods, what's going on at their businesses, that they are paying attention, because we still have people that are out there. Again, this spring we got robbed during the night. Somebody came and cut our propane lines and took our tanks, and there was just a big, you can kind of watch what's going on Homer Communications, where people are getting hit next. And so it's like, okay, you got to be prepared. And so I don't think we're through the issues. I think there's still more there, but hopefully at some point we'll get a handle on how do we deal with the issues that are going on with the drugs and the crime that's related to that.
Storm?
Public safety. So it goes back to our youth, in my opinion. You keep them busy. You give them programs and activities to do after school. You keep them off the streets. There isn't anywhere. I mean, when I was a kid, we had the roller rink. We had Catchmix Center. We had the mall. We had an arcade. We had facilities. And then we had the Boys and Girls Club a little bit later. And our kids are just running loose. Again, I'm lucky. I have a mom that takes my kids after school. And my older kids love her, so they go there as well. But if they didn't, they could turn out to be little hoodlums. And luckily, we have a great police force that will watch out for that, and people that grew up here as well. But I think it's back to basics. We need to educate our children. That's where it should come from. It's public safety.
Thank you. Joey?
Thanks. I'd echo some of those comments. I think the new police station is a wonderful thing. I understand the funding for it was somewhat capped, though, and it could have been pushed through at a higher level, which I think would have been nice. The flip side of that question is also about the environment. And as a geologist, I'll speak to some of the things I know about. I already mentioned arsenic in groundwater, but I think we could do something to help protect our residents and the surrounding area by putting through something when somebody purchases a house on having not just a... Right now, you only have to do a coliform test, a sewage-related water quality test, if you have an independent well and not one for heavy metals. And knowing what we know about arsenic, that's awful because a lot of these wells actually have high arsenic. So if there's a way to require that and also potentially help subsidize it, it's about a $400 cost burden, and I wouldn't want to slow down our real estate machine, but I think this would be a good thing to do in the interest of public health. There's silicate dust on our roadways. We tend to sometimes wear it on our sleeve about being tough Alaskans, and it's a dusty road, and that's just what it is. But the truth is that dust coats your lungs. Your lungs can't dissolve it, and ultimately we incorporate it in our bodies and grow a new layer of active tissue around it. So silicate dust is a potentially a bigger thing than we give it credit for or talk about, and some incentives for paving even businesses around town that are sources of windblown dust could go a long way to helping us. And the third issue is potentially from leaded fuel in the naval aircraft that conduct their exercises here. A lot of military organizations still use leaded fuel for various reasons, so thanks.
Thank you. Tom?
Thanks. Well, public safety is always a concern, but with the construction of our new ultra-modern police station, our new public safety building, we'll be eliminating many of our current restraints as far as when it comes to managing the details of keeping our community safe. We have already hired several new police officers and purchased numerous new vehicles to better keep potential criminals and the crimes they commit under control. A bigger and more visual presence often is a deterrent to crime.
Thank you. All right, V. We are going to have V come up and ask a student question for us.
Hello. So in this past year, budget cuts have been incredibly stressful for teachers, students, and parents. If you were elected, what would you encourage the city to do to aid the struggling school system?
I am not quite sure. That's a big question, and I don't really know that I have a good answer to that on what the city's role is on that, other than as a community, we all tend to work together when there are issues with the strike and possibilities and budget cuts. We do a lot of extracurricular after-school activities, so I'm pretty limited on what I can input on that question just because I'm not quite sure.
Joey?
Thanks. First, I'm very empathetic to it. I'm an alumni from our local schools here, also KPC and also UAF, and we've seen tragic budget cuts to all these across the board. To borrow an example from Canada, they had a governor in one of their states over there, they call them provinces, in Quebec, who did this many years ago, and folks now talk about Quebec as being put 50 years behind because you shut down the educational institutions. So I think there's a lot to lose, and it's a long road back to get to where you are in terms of accreditation and other things, especially for specialized programs. I agree with Storm in the sense that there isn't maybe a lot that we can do directly at our level, but we can always communicate things forward. We can communicate things to our borough reps. We can communicate things to the state level and try to insist on the folks making these decisions how what a bad idea they really are. So, thanks.
Tom?
Thank you. Well, as far as the schools, that's not a city issue. That's a borough issue. The borough runs the schools. And what we can do as citizens is we can go out and we can approve that sales tax cap, which will generate the additional revenue that we need to come up and help us with these shortfalls. That will be a big thing. Remember, that sales tax cap is dealing with $1965 in 2019 timeframe. Think about what you could buy in 1965 at $500 with that small tax cap compared to what you can buy today. So that's one good solution to resolve the issue.
Shelley.
I agree with Tom on that. I think that it's really important as the borough is looking for money, because it's not in our job description to deal with the schools from a policy. That's not our job nor the funding, but there's ways we can be supportive. I think that it would, since my kids were in high school, I've always felt like we have such a beautiful facility up there that it's important that we put some other, vocational ed classes in there and do more, because not every child is going to go to college. Not everyone is headed that way. And I think that there's a lot of community members and business owners that would love to be able to be a part of creating that VOTEC for the kids. And I think that I'd like to see us do something like that, because I think it would be very beneficial in mentoring and kids being able to move on with life like the fishing industry has done.
Great, thank you. So many of these questions, are quality of life. When we talk about community, quality of life, public safety, public health, and education, and we feel that our hands are tied, whether it's at the state level or the borough level or the city level. What we can do at the city level, in my opinion, because the borough does carry the burden of funding that, as well as the state, is we can look at those community centers that you're speaking about. Because when our kids have the opportunity, they get coaching in their education, and they serve some of the role that the library does now. They also have the opportunity for housing for these vocational ed programs. So I think it just creates, kind of a Pandora's box when we start looking at what we want to do, and it just gets bigger and bigger. So now we will start with Joey. In the event of an equally split decision with no tie-breaking vote, what are two specific strategies you could or would employ to move toward consensus and getting city business done?
Well, thanks. One thing I would do is try not to get so entrenched in my position. Always remain movable. And I know that sounds a little funny. I've been a part of several scientific think tanks, and I've learned through going through them, but incredible fun, by the way. They're really fun to come up with a solution with a handful of different individuals brought together for a singular purpose. But one important behavior I've learned during those is to not get so entrenched that you're not movable. So that's one. The other is to just consider long-term effects. I think it's sometimes a good mechanism to keep people moving. Say, well, what's this going to look like 12 years down the road? What's this policy or this ordinance we're pushing through going to look like in a dozen years? And I think keeping our eye on the future also helps get people to common ground. So thanks.
Thank you, John.
Thanks. Well, I've always listened to my fellow council members' opinion, and sometimes they're different than mine. Yeah, that's true. They are. But, I try to work towards a compromise where the outcome results in no losers. I'm a firm believer that if everybody walks away with something they want, then there are no losers. Remember, 10% of something is better than 100% of nothing anytime.
In my life, I try to choose my battles wisely. What is really important? What is really important to my town? What is something that is not maybe quite so important, but it's a good thing for our town? And I think that is the way that I have looked at everything in at the city council level. What really is something that I'm not going to give on versus what are things that I can compromise on because it's good for the whole? I found that it is important that I don't hold on to any of these decisions tightly. If it's all about me and what I want, then that's not good for everyone. I have to look at it as a whole. I can't look at one little piece. I need to look at the big picture. I need to make sure that the consequences of every single one of our actions are consequences that we're going to be able to live with and not derail our town. And sometimes it's a hard decision to have to say no. Sometimes it's a hard decision to say yes. And now I got to stop.
Thank you. And you, Storm.
Split decisions. So I'm pretty familiar with this on a home front level and on a wrestling board level across for a pretty big board, the Alaska USA Wrestling. So I feel like I can bring a lot of skills to the table with that. I wasn't always a mom of six. I am a mom of six now. And with that came some changes, and that was being diplomatic and deciding which topics in within our household, which would go across the board with the city council, which are more important, which aren't so important, and weighing the pros or cons. And I need to put my personal opinions aside because it's not about my opinion. It's about my community members, my citizens, my children, my parents, other city council members. And so I feel like I have some pretty darn good experience on listening to what everybody needs and weighing the pros and cons of those and coming up with the best decision.
Thank you very much. So in fairness to the council, quite a few people don't understand how an Open Meeting Act works. The city council has to abide by the Open Meetings Act. So when they have an ordinance that's introduced, they cannot go meet over coffee and hash it out and work out the details and ask the specific questions. They have to do it in an open meeting. They can only speak to one other person or two. What is it for you, two? So just understand when they're having these discussions at the city council table, quite often that's where that information is worked out, and they cannot work through it on the aside out in the public. So just know that they're taking on a great task trying to get through that. We're going to take about a 5-minute break so I can get organized on community and questions from the audience, and that'll give you a chance to stretch your legs, and we'll come back here in 5 minutes.
Thank you.
Okay, everyone, let's have a seat. We're going to wrap up in about 15 minutes, so if you're standing up, if you could please take a seat. Okay, sadly, we're not going to be able to get through all these questions, but these are great questions, and we will forward all of these to the candidates, and I would hope that they would find a way to reach that out to you to answer those additional questions. So we're going to start with you on this one, Tom. And for the timekeeper, we're going to give 1 minute per response. What can you say about water from Homer being pumped to Ketchumex City when they don't pay our city taxes?
That's a big subject. The agreement that we are coming to is they are not paying city taxes, but they're going to pay a surcharge equal to our city taxes. So in essence, they're going to pay the same thing.
Shelley?
Well, reality is they're already buying our water. It's just coming in a truck.
Storm?
That's a good point, because I was buying that water a while back, and I was paying a pretty good fee to have that water delivered. Whether I needed water or not, I was paying $37.50 for that delivery. So I guess on that aspect, we were paying for money, and if they were paying the same amount of taxes or whatever is adjusted, then maybe it's not quite such an issue, but I think it should be fair across the board.
Joy.
Thanks. It doesn't make fundamental sense to me, I guess is where I would start with that. Ketchumex City Incorporated to be different than Homer, to be sort of anti-Homer, and to extend services to there. Right now, the trucking water may go out there, but that's a limited portion, and that stops certain size developments, and that it also helps the greater area, which has always been Homer's charge, and it's our community is much larger than just the city limits. It would make sense to me, in order to start having discussion about city services, to talk about joining the city, because it really seems like it's opening a can of worms in a way that can't be controlled.
How come you didn't say the word annexation? Because if I say it, they throw tomatoes. That's a really bad word all over the state. Okay, we'll start with you on this one, Shelley. Good answer, though. Shelley, what are your thoughts on Hillcorp's plans to expand their operations in Lower Cook Inlet, specifically the impacts to our tourism industry, charters, wildlife viewing, etc.?
Well, I'm not really a big fan of Hillcorp, so I don't know that there's much more to say about that. I appreciate that they're looking for options out there. I think that there's still some other things I'd like to see happen before they are drilling in Lower Cook Inlet. But I think that it's important that overall that we're responsible for our environment. And they need to be just as responsible as a little tiny oil company. And if they're not held to the same standards that small companies are held at, then we have some issues. And I think that that's the part that when you see people that are upset, it's because they're not being policed like they need to be. I think we do have some. I think we do need to be energy independent from other company or other places around the world. So that part is my little struggle. And I am stopping.
You're stopping. Storm, yours.
I am not real comfortable with them coming down here. I don't have good data to tell you why, other than I just don't think we need it right now. I don't want it I don't want to see it out here. I think we have other resources that we could use up the road a little bit more, put it on the land. I just don't want to see it in our waters right out in my bay where I grew up.
Joey?
Thanks. Yeah, that's a difficult topic to talk about for sure. There was a radio call that was done by a whale researcher in town named Olga recently, and she had asked about her sight line or view if there were an oil rig out there. And I would offer up somebody who, as a geologist, I formerly worked as a researcher at different times for some of the larger oil companies, that there are always options, and it would be nice to get support from our state in implementing those options. In California, nobody wanted to see an offshore drilling rig either, so they made them drill them from shore. And more than 20 years ago, they were able to drill more than 50 miles out, so we could easily drill these things. They could be drilled from Anchor Point. Technology has gotten far better now. Then it would be nice to have support that if this is going to happen, it can happen in the best way possible, and it doesn't seem like we have that support right now. And otherwise, I'd echo the comments that were said before. Thanks.
Thank you. Tom?
Well, as an old oil and gas man myself, I will insist that they do it in a highly safe and responsible manner. And that's all I'm going to say on that.
Are you familiar with our safety record?
Partially, yes. That's why I said highly safe and responsible manner.
Perfect. Thank you. Okay, we'll start with you, Storm. So this is going to be kind of a long question, and that'll give you the opportunity. It's something that we're all dealing with right now, and I'm going to try to wrap two of them together. So major changes are upon us. You don't have anything on your list. These are all surprises. Major changes are upon us, not just climate, but also politics and the global economy. How will Homer adapt, for example, the climate action plan that was adopted in 2007, and what are your plans to continue progress to meet those goals and address climate action in our community? I'll start with you, Storm.
Well, I've looked a little bit at the plan that Mr. Hornaday adopted in 2007, and I think as a potential city council member, I would recommend that we bring it back to the table and see if we can revamp it, if there's anything that we can do to update it. I'm sure there are lots of things that we can do. We can do focus on encouraging more solar and wind options. That's something that I personally would like to do on a resident level and do tax incentives perhaps for that. But I think it's definitely something that needs to be revisited and a task force to update the policy.
Joey?
Thanks. I'll chime in for the climate action plan stuff as well. You know, it's great that Homer has one of those. A lot of folks actually choose to move here and live in our community because we have a climate action plan. So it's a wonderful thing about our community. And I understand we've been doing a good job on that through natural gas conversion and energy-efficient buildings since then. We haven't done a lot with solar. Solar is a great thing where we could take better advantage of it for our latitude because the optimal angle for solar panels here is about 60 degrees from flat, 60 degrees down, which means you get more energy out of a solar panel if it's vertical on a building wall than you would on a roof. And that is very amenable to a snow-rich climate where putting solar panels on roofs is a difficult proposition. So I think there's a lot more we could do with solar and potentially a lot of grant avenues to go down. Instead of trim around buildings, you can have a row of solar panels at the top that would be very energy efficient as well. I think that'll help. I'm going to speak just briefly back to the Tilcorp thing because I still have a few seconds. And I don't. There it goes.
Tom.
Well, the plan is obviously in need of revision to reflect more realistic goals. A major charge of the 2007 plan was all centered around energy management to best reduce our carbon footprint. The city of Homer has done a great job in that regard over the years by converting municipal buildings to natural gas for heating and water heating to lower the costs of our carbon footprint through natural gas. The lighting in all of our municipal buildings was upgraded this year to LED technology. That reduced both energy and maintenance costs. And we're currently conducting a study at our ICE plant on the Spit that will potentially reduce our carbon footprint there by incorporating natural gas into the ICE manufacturing process. All energy conservation measures must pencil out, which often makes renewables not cost effective. The advent of natural gas to our community has done much to reduce our overall carbon footprint, which was a form of energy that wasn't even attainable when the plan was authored in 2007.
So when I look at all the changes that are going on around the world, there's a lot of voices speaking. There's a lot of extreme voices speaking from either side, which makes it at some point become emotional and where we stand on this. And so where I stand on all this is that we need to be responsible with our environment. We need to be responsible when we are the way we live. We need to be responsible the way we're playing out in our in the water, on the land. We need to be responsible in making sure that we teach our children to live responsibly, that we're getting away from the waste. When you look at all the plastic bottles laying on the ground, get back to, use a glass. There's some things like that, because we've become such a disposable world. When we go to the grocery store, how many different, kinds of shampoo can you get? And okay, I'm done.
Everyone on the shampoo. Okay, now we're going to, I can tell the audience is about finished. I know that they're eagerly interested in more that the candidates have to say, but when they start to squirm because their legs are going to sleep, it's time for us to wrap up. So we're gonna wrap this up with a 1 minute closing statement, and we will start with Storm.
Thank you, Kelly.
Oh wait, no, you started the last one, didn't you?
I did.
Let's start with Joe.
For my closing statement, I have this. Homer is a city of all kinds of great things. We are one of the most beautiful places on Earth. As a PhD geologist, I hope I can say that with some degree of credibility. We are also a leading city in Alaska. We're a city of the arts. Personally, I'm a potter, and I also danced in our very first Nutcracker role way back in the day. We're a city of marine trades, of great marine trades. We're a city of natural resources, from the conservation side all the way over to the harvesting side. We are a city of educational excellence. We're a city of high quality of life, where folks like myself want to raise their children. And I think we've always been a city of innovation, too. I believe that developing with our natural resources theme in mind as this sort of litmus test in the background will help maintain, sustain, and grow our community in smart ways. Thanks.
Tom.
None of us are born with wisdom. Wisdom is something we learn along life's path, and it must be channeled to make sure that we make the best decisions. And we must elect leaders who have the courage to make those wise and very often tough decisions. I campaigned for a second term on my record with demonstrated experience for making good things happen at all levels of our community. Public officials must be ready and willing to respond to citizens when faced with questions, wherever they may meet, and not ignore constituents, as candidate Joey did last week at the post office when I asked a question of him, and he stated that I could read it online, and then he walked away. Homer needs elected officials who will not walk away, but instead face issues head on, regardless of whether they agree or not. With that, I solicit your vote on October 1, so we can continue our work to keep our community a great place to live, grow, and create our sustainable future. Thank you.
Shelley.
Oh yeah, my 90 seconds is going here. Anyway, I just want to thank you all for coming. And it's been a pleasure to be on the City Council. It's been some rough times, but it is actually, I feel like that we have done a great job in moving our city forward in places that needed to be moved, that we've corrected some things that needed to be corrected. We still have more work to do. And I look forward to, if you reelect me, to be able to continue on with some of those projects. And I will stop before they say stop. And you guys have a wonderful evening.
Storm.
Well, I'm wondering if I should give Joey 15 seconds of my my however long. I'm just me. I'm a mom. I'm not a good advocate for myself. So this has been really difficult for me, but the role that I played in my job at Homer Medical Center for almost 19 years, being an advocate for Medicaid patients who need help, becoming a foster parent and going through the OCS foster care program here in Homer has taught me a lot of things about what we are lacking and what we need. I'm really good for advocating for our youth, as I've been saying all evening. In the wrestling world, I have taken on personally several children that we've just kind of handheld, and they have now become amazing, upstanding citizens who want to give back. And they, I think my experience as a mom and a caregiver for my patients at Homer Medical, helping them, I can help you guys. I can be a good teammate. That's what I'm all about, is being a team. So I'm not very good at advocating for myself and speaking, but give me a chance and I will do you guys right.
Let's give them all a hand. I would just like to thank everyone for attending tonight, staying engaged in the process. Thank all of you for serving and for putting yourself out there to run the Friends of the Library, the Chamber, and we are all here for our timekeeper tonight, V. This is why we do what we do, in my opinion. So we're going to take care of this so you have a future, V. Thank you all for coming.
One last thing. Please vote October 1st and give it up for Kelly Cooper. Thank you so much for moderating.